So I thought we would do, we'll see if we have time, but three topics for tonight relating to Hilchos Pesach. The first one is the halacha, or we'll see if it is a halacha, that you're supposed to study the laws of Pesach 30 days before Pesach. And we'll see, actually, an interesting question, whether tonight's shiur has to be about Hilchos Pesach or not. So the Gemara says, and here the first source, that's a Gemara. Psachim da vav amid aleph. Kedetanya sholem v'darshin b'chus ha-pesach kodem ha-pesach shloshim yom. Rabbi Shimon Galil omer shtei shabbosos. So you have to ask and doresh, which we'll look at, try to figure out what those words mean. The halachos of Pesach before Pesach for 30 days. Rabbi Shimon Galil says 2 weeks. We paskin like the Chachamim, that is 30 days. The Gemara says that the source for this is that on Moshe Rabbeinu told discussed the halachos of Pesach Sheni already on Pesach Rishon, which was a month before. Pesach Rishon's a month before Pesach Sheni. So from there we see that you have to start studying the laws of Pesach 30 days before Pesach. In fact, many people have the custom of starting Hilchos Pesach already at the Purim Suda. At the Purim Suda, they start learning Hilchos Pesach. Now, is this halacha specific to Hilchos Pesach, or does it apply to all Yomim Tovim? So if you look below at the Mishnah Berurah brings two opinions on this. The first opinion is that it does apply. This is the view of Rashi. It does apply to all Yomim Tovim, and so it would apply for Sukkos as well. 30 days before Sukkos, for example, you would have to start learning Hilchos Sukkos. The Gra, though, he adopts this view. If you look at the second source, says umikol makom batzeres ein sarech. For Shavuos, you don't have to start 30 days before. It's good enough to start at Rosh Chodesh. There's not so many halachos of Shavuos. In fact, there's not really any special halachos of Shavuos. There are some in Haggim, but for the most part, there aren't that many unique halachos. Though I guess you do have to know Hilchos Yontif. So that is the halacha. Now it's paskind in Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says. Sholem b'chus Pesach kodem lePesach shloshim yom. What's interesting about the formulation? How is the formulation of the Shulchan Aruch slightly different than the formulation in the Gemara? What did the Gemara say? Sholem v'darshim, right? And Shulchan Aruch says sholem. So we'll talk about in a moment why that might be significant. Now, there's a question. The question is, nobody seems to do this, or at least most people don't seem to do this. Most people don't start learning Hilchos Pesach 30 days before Pesach. Even people that are learning all day don't necessarily start learning Hilchos Pesach a month before Pesach. So is this really a halacha? Is this mandatory? Do you really have to start learning Hilchos Pesach a month before Pesach? So this would seem to be a debate in the Rishonim. The Ran asks the following question. The Gemara, on the one hand, says that you're supposed to start learning Hilchos Pesach a month before Pesach. On the other hand, the Gemara in Megillah, on Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, says that Moshe was misaken, that on Pesach you learn the laws of Pesach, on Sukkos you learn the laws of Sukkos. It doesn't sound like you have to start a month before. So the Ran's answer is really you don't have to start a month before. What's this halacha that you need to start a month before? The halacha is that you need to, if somebody has a shaila, then they get precedence. It's an interesting halacha. Let's say somebody, there's three people waiting, who have a question to ask a rav. And one of them relates to Hilchos Pesach. So they go to the front of the line if it's within 30 days of Pesach. In fact, this halacha goes so far as the following. There's a halacha that the laws of Shomrim change if the Shomer is an employee. So for the 30 days before Pesach, and according to the Rashi, this is true for all Yamim Tovim. So the Rav or the Rebbe is like an employee of the students. Why? Because if the students wish to choose the topic, they say, we want to learn Hilchos Pesach. So if it's within 30 days before Pesach, they get to choose. So that's the first, that's the view of the Ran. So according to the Ran, there's no halacha that you must learn Hilchos Pesach for 30 days before Pesach. It's simply that if you have a shaila in Hilchos Pesach 30 days before Pesach, then your shaila is given priority. You get to go to the front of the line. You get to choose the topic of the shir. Tonight, for example, I had decided we should start with Hilchos Brachos. And then Lisa said, no, I have a Hilchos Pesach shaila. I want to do Hilchos Pesach. I would have no choice but to do Hilchos Pesach. And I was nervous about that, which is why I decided to do Hilchos Pesach, because I thought that anyway, if I prepared Hilchos Brachos, I might be overruled. That's the way the Ran understands it. So if we paskin like the Ran, then it would turn out that what most people do, which is that they don't start learning Hilchos Pesach 30 days before Pesach, would be okay. And perhaps the Shulchan Aruch paskins that way, because if we noted the Lashon of the Shulchan Aruch, which is again the third source on your sheet, says, Sho'alim b'chos Pesach kodem Pesach shloshim yom. Sho'alim implies that it means you could ask shailas. On the other hand, the Beis Yosef himself and gives another answer to the Ran's question. The Beis Yosef says, what was the question? The question is, on the one hand, the Gemara says for 30 days before Pesach, we're sho'alim b'darshan b'chos Pesach. On the other hand, the Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu instituted that on Pesach, you learn about laws of Pesach, implying that dafka on Pesach, not necessarily 30 days before. So the other answer that the Beis Yosef gives to this question is that no, Hilchos Pesach that relate to before Pesach, so you can't wait till Pesach itself to learn Hilchos Pesach, because there's so many halachos of Pesach that you would need to learn before Pesach. You have to learn how to kasher your house for Pesach before Pesach. Can't wait for Pesach. On Pesach, that means to give drush, to give ideas, to give inspiration, all those types of things in Yane Pesach, or the halachos of Pesach that you could learn on Pesach. But 30 days before Pesach, you have to start doing actual Hilchos Pesach. So to summarize, we have two questions. First question was, is this just about Pesach or is it about all Yomim Tovim? According to Rashi, it's all Yomim Tovim. According to the Beis Yosef, maybe it's just Hilchos Pesach. If it's just Hilchos Pesach, why would it dafka be Hilchos Pesach? So if you take a look, the Mishnah Brura writes, this is in the third line of the Mishnah Brura, he says, because there's so many halachos of Hilchos Pesach that you have to know even before Pesach. What are those halachos? So look at the example. It's bolded on your sheets. What are the examples? For example, kagon, tchinas chitim, the grinding of the wheat. In other words, you have to know how to grind your, make flour for Pesach. Afias hamatzos, the baking of the matzos. Hagalas kelim, kashering the kelim. Uvir chametz. So he gives four examples of the types of halachos of Pesach that everybody has to know before Pesach. Now, I have a shaila for you. How many of these four halachos, how many of them are practically relevant for most people? Right, maybe bir chametz. Most people, I don't know anyone who grinds their own flour for Pesach. Almost nobody, though. There are some people that bake their own matzahs, but they don't really, most people don't need to know those halachos. Even if you do bake your own matzahs, I think they sort of tell you what you're supposed to do. Kashering kalim, so that is more relevant, but the truth is most people don't even kasher kalim for Pesach. You can't, there's nothing wrong with it. Most people end up having Pesach dishes and Pesach silverware. They don't kasher their silverware. So I guess bir chametz we do. So it's sort of interesting that the Mishnah Berurah says the reason why for the opinion that it's dafka Pesach is because there's so many halachos you have to know before Pesach. But the truth is most of the halachos that traditionally people had to know aren't even that relevant nowadays for most people. Of course, it's always good to know the halachos, but you could argue that the reason why it's so important is not even that relevant nowadays anyway, because how many people are grinding their own wheat? So again, we mentioned that the simple reading is the Shulchan Aruch implies, and this is the view of the Mishnah Berurah, that everybody has to start learning Hilchos Pesach 30 days before Pesach. But we noted that most people don't do this, and maybe that's because of the view of the Ran. The Ran says that that it doesn't mean you have to learn Hilchos Pesach before Pesach. It just means if you have a question, then your question, which is on Hilchos Pesach, is given priority. Other justifications, other defenses of the minhag for the fact that most people don't end up spending 30 days before Pesach learning Hilchos Pesach. If you look at the Chok Yaakov, which you have here below, he says, well, maybe we fulfill that minhag with the drasha, the Shabbos HaGadol drasha, where the Rav of a shul will usually teach Hilchos Pesach before Pesach, or the Yotzer. It's very interesting. Anybody go to a shul where they say Yotzeros? Lisa, where? The Young Israel Riverdale?
Rabbi Willig.
Rabbi Willig shul. Good, good for you. So if you look at the Yotzer for Shabbos HaGadol, it summarizes all of Hilchos Pesach, everything you need to know. In fact, there are many halachos that the Rishonim extrapolate from that Yotzer, from that tefillah, that said. So between the drashos, the Yotzeros for Parshas Para and Shabbos, and this past week, Shabbos HaChodesh and Shabbos HaGadol, so you'll learn Hilchos Pesach that way. That's good enough. That's the view of the Chok Yaakov, or the opinion of the Ran. On the other hand, it really is, probably ideal to follow what the Mishnah Berurah says, which is to start learning Hilchos Pesach a month before Pesach. There is so much to learn, and if we're going to actually properly keep Hilchos Pesach, it is good to spend some time learning. So that's why I think it was a good idea, at the very least tonight, even though it's not quite 30 days before Pesach, but it's almost Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So it's good that we're starting to learn Hilchos Pesach and the like. There was another question that I think Ilana requested that we talk about, and that is the minhag of Mos Chitim, which comes up in the same Sif in Shulchan Aruch, the Sif in Shulchan Aruch about things that we do before Pesach. So where does this custom come from? Or I should ask even a better question, is it a custom or is it a halacha? So if we take a look at the next group of Makoros, it says, under the title Minag Liknos Chitim. So there's a Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says, Amar Rabbi Yosi Barbun, L'chita de Pischa Shneimasar Chodesh, Bein Lisa Bein Lases. What does that mean? It means that if you're in a city, you're taxed for Mos Chitim, it says literally Chitaya de Pesach, so the wheat for Pesach, 12 months. So what does that mean? So this is sort of like if anyone's an accountant or a tax lawyer or something like this. Once you're a resident of a town, you have to start paying local tax. So when do you become a resident of a town for purposes of paying Kimcha Dechita or Mos Chitim? Answer is if you live there for 12 months. That's only if you didn't formally establish residency. The poskim say, let's say you buy a house, or you even sign a 12-month lease, so it's clear you've become a permanent resident, and then be chayv immediately this tax. Now, there's a nafka mina both in terms of paying the tax once you live there for 12 months, or you've established residency, you have to pay the tax. Likewise, you're eligible to receive Mos Chitim if you're a poor person and you need Mos Chitim. So once you've established residency here for 12 months, then you're eligible to receive Mos Chitim. So this is based off of Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi doesn't formally tell you that it's a chiyuv. The Yerushalmi simply says that it takes 12 months to be eligible. But as a minhag, so we have that in the Orzer. The Orzer was a Rishon from Austria, Bali Atosfos, and it's cited by the Darkei Moshe, which is your next source over here. The Darkei Moshe is written by the Ramah. Rav Moshe Isserles wrote the Darkei Moshe. The Darkei Moshe is his commentary on the Tur and the Beis Yosef, as opposed to on the Shulchan Aruch. But that's where many of the halachos of the Ramah are presented. So the Darkei Moshe it's as follows. Kasav Borzerua, minhag akhilos, lasim mas al hakahal, letzar chitim. So if you notice, on the one hand it says minhag, I just bolded it, minhag implying that this is a custom. But then the Ramah also calls it a mas. Mas is a tax. What does tax suggest? Something that you have to pay. So it's somewhat unclear which one is it. Is it a minhag or is it a mas? So let's read on. So there's a minhag to place a tax ala kahal, letzarchitim liten pesach vepesach laniyim, to give to the aniyim to buy wheat, or to give them wheat for Pesach. Kedaminim perakant above vaser b'yishalmi lechiti debischa yud beis chodesh ben lisa ben liten perush emsha beir. Fu Ashir, if you've lived in a city for 12 months and you're wealthy, wealthy, Ashir here doesn't mean like you're rich. Wealthy means you're able to give. And Tachlitain Vuhuani, if you're poor, then no sin law, then you receive. So that is the source. On one hand, it's a minag, on the other hand, it's a mas. What does that mean? So the Achronim say different explanations, but the simplest one is as follows. It's called a tax. Because in the olden days, they would actually assess a person for maus chitim, meaning to say, the communal structure, the way it used to be until a couple hundred years ago, until modern times, was that the Jewish communities had a large degree of autonomy. They lived in non-Jewish countries, and the non-Jewish countries would impose certain requirements on the Jewish community. For example, they had to pay taxes to the government. But they were oftentimes largely left to manage their own internal affairs. And they would have their own self-governance, sometimes called Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir, in which everybody would vote for the governing body, or at least those who paid taxes would be able to vote. And actually, the taxes would go to communal needs, things like building schools or shuls or mikvahs or the like. In fact, you know, one of the reasons why there wasn't such a tuition crisis was because everybody would pay for tuition. So the reason why it's not like nowadays. Nowadays, the people who pay for tuition are only the people that need to pay for tuition. So, you know, you pay a lot of money in a short period of time, as opposed to spreading it throughout the whole community, sort of like in the government taxes everybody for public education, and then you use it when you need it. But anyway, so they had these taxes, and taxes included taxes of charity, and one of these charity taxes was maus chitim. So it's a minhag, it's not a formal requirement, but the minhag was to make it into a mas, into a tax that was formally obligated. How much would you pay? You would be assessed. The community would assess a person based off of what they could afford. So they would look at all the needs for maus chitim. In other words, how much money did they need to pay for the poor people's matzahs? And then they would assess the residents of the community, the Ashirim, to figure out how much each person had to pay. That's the way it used to operate. The Gra, in the next source, shows that there's actually a little bit of a remez to this idea of maus chitim in the Pasuk itself. How so? The Pasuk says, Shivas yamim tochal matzos, uvayom hashvi chag lashem, matzos yachel eis shivas hayamim. So the first pasuk says tochal matzos. The second one says matzos ye achel. Says the Gra, yesh lavin madua nechvelu ha'azharos v'nishne pamaim. Right, what seemed to be one pasuk right after the other. First pasuk vav, then pasuk zayin, says that there's a mitzvah to eat matzos for 7 days. Why does it need to repeat it? Berishon ksiv tochal uvesheni ye achel. First it says tochal matzos, and it says ye achel. Yesh lomar l'rames bezeh haminhag. Amuva Bagos Rama, the minhag that we just saw, liknos chitim l'chalkam laniyim l'tzarch pesach, to buy chitim and distribute them to the poor. V'hinei b'rishon etziva l'chol echad miyisrael al achilas matzah pesach. So the first pasach says everybody has to eat matzah on Pesach. V'zeh shekasev shivas yamim tochal matzos. Rotza lomar, ata be'atzmecha, you yourself have to buy eat matzah. But then the second pasuk adds, besides the chiyuv that you have for yourself to make sure you have to eat matzah, musar ata lishtadav leros shematzos yeachel eshivas hayamim, that matzahs are eaten for 7 days. Meaning to say, the pasuk says as follows: the first pasuk says shivas yamim tochal matzos, for 7 days you shall eat matzah. The second pasuk says matzos yeachel eshivas hayamim, matzah should be eaten for 7 days. So these are two obligations. Number one is you have to eat matzah. Make sure you can eat matzah. The second is matzos yeachel. You should make sure matzah is eaten. What does it mean? How is my responsibility to make sure matzah is eaten? It's my responsibility to make sure that if there's someone who can't afford to eat matzah, that I help them be able to fulfill that mitzvah. So that's what the Grah finds an allusion to this minhag already in the Psukim. The Maharil, in the next source, the Maharil was Ashkenazi Rishon, it's a little bit poetic. So he says, 30 days before Pesach, we start getting ready for Pesach. What do we do 30 days before Pesach? So we start cleaning the houses, sweeping the rooms, and cleaning the kelim. But first and foremost, to buy chitim for the aniyim. In other words, what's the number one thing we should start doing 30 days before Pesach? Thinking about those who don't have. And I would add an interesting point, which is that this halacha is paskened in Aruch Chaim, in Shulchan Aruch Chaim, as you see over here, to give maos chitim. But you could ask, why is it in Aruch Chaim? It should be in Hilchos Tzedakah and Yerideya. In other words, the Shulchan Aruch has a whole section in Hilchos Tzedakah in Yerideya. So, okay, I'll get to your question in 1 second. So what is it doing in Aruch Chaim, in Hilchos Pesach? So you could say, well, it's in Hilchos Pesach, it's relevant to Pesach. But we could add the following. We could argue, and I saw this in the Sefer, that besides the regular halachos of Hilchos Tzedakah, this has a particular halacha, and it might relate to certain differences, like people that are exempt from regular tzedakah are chayav in Hilchos in this mitzvah of maos chitim. Why? Because this is a din in maybe in Yantif or specifically Pesach, as we saw in the Gra implies it's specifically Pesach, maybe because the requirements are, it is so expensive. And why is that? Why is this a din in Hilchos Yantif? So the Rambam writes something very interesting. If you look at the next source, the Rambam writes, Ketzad haktanim. So the Rambam here, Hilchos Yantif, Perek Vav, Halacha Yud Ches, is talking about the mitzvah Simchos Yantif. Simchos Yantif means that a person should enjoy Yantif and also give to their family members to help them enjoy Yantif in a way that they most enjoy it. So what does that mean practically? Haktanim nosem klayos vegozem umigdanos. So kids like treats, like foods. Okay, the steaks used to be a little lower. You could get away with the klayos, which is parched wheat, and egozim are nuts. So give the kids candy, give the kids treats, give them something that they enjoy on Yantif. And women like nice clothing and jewelry. Men like meat and wine. Okay, so each person should get whatever brings them particular joy. And then the Rambam adds something very important. When you eat and enjoy yourself on Yantif, you're eating your good foods, you're enjoying yourself, you also have to think about the people that don't have, to the ger, to the asom, the orphan, the almana, the widow, along with all the people that are needy. Aval mi shenoad lasos chatzero v'ochal v'shosa hu v'anav ishto v'eno ma'achil u'ma'ashkel aniyim. But somebody goes and they enjoy themselves on Yantif. They have their good food and their good wine and have a great blast. But they don't include others. They don't include aniyim, ulumari nefesh, and people that are sad. Ein zu simchas mitzvah. Ela simchas krisa. That's not a simchas mitzvah. What is that? It's simcha of the belly. It's not simchas mitzvah. Simchas yantif is supposed to be a simcha of mitzvah. Val elu ne'mar, zivcheyem kuch kalechem onim lahem kol ochlin yitamu kilachmam lenafsham. The simcha kazu kolon hilo. It's disgraceful. Shenemar vizarisi peresh al pneichem peresh chageichem. So part of Simchas Yantif is thinking about others, making sure that you don't just have Simcha yourself, but think about others. And if you don't think about others, then your simcha is not actually a simchas mitzvah. It's just simchas kreisim. So how do you think of others? So one, you know, very nice thing is to invite them to your house and have them enjoy Yantif with you. But at the very least, that's not always what's relevant for everybody, but at the very least, it means to help those in need be able to enjoy their own Yantif by giving them, again, wheat or matzahs or flour or money or whatever it is, to make sure they too have a nice Simchas Yantif. So this is a din. We'll get to there in a second. Okay, great questions. So this is a din, not in, just in Hilchos Tzedakah. Hilchos Tzedakah is a din throughout the year. You always have to think about other people and give tzedakah. But this is specifically in Hilchos Yantif, that for your Simchas Yantif to be a Simchas Mitzvah, you have to have include others. And if you don't, it's not a Simchas Mitzvah, but like the Rambam says, it's Simchas Kreso, just a Simcha, the belly. It's not a Simchas Mitzvah. Okay, so now there are a bunch of questions from Lauren. So let's start with the last one. Why don't we do this before Sukkot? So the answer, according to many Achronim, is yes, it's not just Pesach. It does apply to Sukkot as well. Why would you disagree? So the answer might be that even, you know, both in those days and nowadays, the simcha, the expenses of Pesach are higher. Pesach is, I think, the most expensive yantif. Matzahs are very expensive, and kosher Pesach food is very expensive. And so it could be that it applies for every yantif. And certainly if we're going to take this approach that's based off of this Rambam and Simchas Yantif, so then it would apply for all Yamim Tovim. But it's stressed in particular on Pesach because on Pesach the needs are particularly great. That's one theory. There's another theory, though, why it might just be on Pesach. And that theory is, let's turn to, and then I'll get back to your first question, the section a little below where it says, Lama Dafka Pesach. Why does this halacha apply Dafka on Pesach? So if it does apply Dafka on Pesach, so the Shaar HaTzion, that's from the Mishnah Berurah, gives two answers. So you see where it says Shaar HaTzion Osiyad. So the first answer is that Dafka Pesach, Shuzman Cheres V'Yoshvin Mesubin V'Chol Echad Hu Uveso Berov Simcha Ein Zekavod L'Hashem Shaniyim Yu Az Re'evim Mitzmeim. V'Alkei Nosten Lam Kemach I'll call Yimei HaPesach, Shiuchal Gamhu L'Sapitiz Mitzrayim B'Simcha. Maybe it's Dafka, especially by Pesach, because on Pesach, there's an Inyan that everybody at their Seder should be like B'nei Chorin. The Mishnah at the beginning of the Arvei Pesachim says, V'afilu Ani should be Yisrael L'Yochal Ad She'yaseif, V'lo Yifchsul L'Me'arba Kosef Shel Yayin. Even an Ani at the Seder has to recline and act like a Ben Chorin, act like a king, act like aristocracy. We're all kings and queens at this there. And therefore, we want everybody, Dafka, to be able to enjoy delicacies and special foods and expensive stuff and be able to recline at the Seder. And that's gufa part of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Chai v'adam liros esatzma or laharos esatzma kilu yatzma Mitzrayim. And therefore, there's Dafka in Indian, especially by Pesach, to make sure that everybody could afford to have that type of Seder. And then the second reason is, like we said before, that matzah is particularly expensive. Now, the first reason might also explain, you know, one of the halachos and staka, again, these are somewhat complex, but oftentimes we only give a person what they need. So in terms of regular halachos staka, we might have said, okay, you need food for the first days of Yantif. So we'll give you first days, come back before the second days, and we'll give you more for the second days. But for most chitim, we give a matzah for the whole of, say, Pesach. So you didn't have to worry about it. And that's part of this mitzvah. So that's the question, why Dafka Pesach? It might not be Dafka Pesach, but if it is Dafka Pesach, it's because of two reasons. A, Pesach's especially expensive, and B, because we want everybody to feel like kings and queens and aristocracy at the Seder. Okay. The first question you asked was, why does the remez only make it into the status of minhag? When does remez become a minhag, and when does it become an actual mitzvah? That's a great question. So the answer is that when does remez, for it to be a mitzvah d'oraisa, it has to either be explicit in the pasuk, the Torah has to say it, like eating matzah is a mitzvah, says it in the Torah, eat matzah, or it has to be some type of drasha, that the Chachamim made a drasha, and using the Midosh HaTorah Nidreshes, and using the hermeneutical principles of an interpretive rules for understanding Pesukim, they understood that the pasuk is teaching me a particular halacha. Then it would be a din d'oraisa. Sometimes you'll find that there's a din d'rabbanan, but the Gemara will quote a pasuk for it. That pasuk is called an asmachta, an allusion. It's not what the pasuk states explicitly, but it's an allusion to this mitzvah d'rabbanan in the pasuk. It might be an intended allusion. According to the Rambam, it's just a mnemonic. But one way or the other, that is, because it's not explicit in the pasuk, and it's not, there's no drasha, so therefore, it is not a chiyuv d'oraisa. It might be a chiyuv d'rabbanan. Over here, by most chitin, it might not even be a chiyuv d'rabbanan, because we don't find even though we find a reference to the concept of maos chitin, the Gemara doesn't say everywhere, you must give maos chitin. So therefore, the implication is that it's not even a formal chiyuv d'rabbanan, but a minhag. However, there's a remez to the minhag. So why does a remez not make it a d'oraisa? Because it's a remez, it's an allusion. It's not explicit enough to be a mitzvah d'oraisa. But it's a very, beautiful interpretation of the Pesukim, as the Gra points out. And therefore, it's a legitimate remez, though it's not formally a mitzvah. Did that answer your question? Okay, good. So a couple other points that come out from here. So if we take a look, going back a little earlier, the Shar Tzion Tafchav Tas Sifkat Zayin. He says, V'kfar Tama B'Sefer Beis David, which is bold.
I don't know if this is going to be addressed later, but how much are we supposed to
do? We'll get there. We'll get there. Good question. So first, just here, B'Kfar Tama B'Sefer Beis David Chelek Archaim, Alashna Rama Shakasa Vuminog, Balo Medina Digmar Yishalmihu. So this was a question that we just sort of alluded to, which is, which one is it? Is it a minhag or is it a chova? On the one, the Yerushalmi sounds like it's an obligation. On the other hand, we call it a minhag. So Ayin Sham Mashakasav Bizeh. So he says, take a look at that sefer, the sefer that addresses this question. If you look it up, he doesn't tell you what he says, but in that sefer, it says that even though the makor in Yerushalmi shows that it's a chiyuv, since it doesn't appear in the Talmud Bavli, it's only in the Talmud Yerushalmi, so it's not a formal obligation, but rather a minhag. What does that mean? Normally, we paskin like the Bavli. Now, it is true, sometimes we learn halachos from the Yerushalmi, especially if they're not against the Bavli, but the Bavli is considered the more authoritative source. It's an interesting question. Why? Why does the Talmud Bavli have more authority than Yerushalmi? One reason that the Rif says is because the Yerushalmi Bavli was written later and accepted by all of Klal Yisrael, and therefore it's more authoritative. Al Kol Panim, that is why he says that it's considered a minhag. But the Mishnah Berurah himself gives a different answer to that question. Ulanias daiti asher lomar. So there is an obligation. You could fulfill your obligation, though, by just giving money to the aniyim. However, the minhag is not just to give them money, but to give them wheat. Why? Why is it better to give them wheat? Because it's mekarev haniyasa. The hana is more close. Why? Because if you give them money, they have to use the money to buy wheat to make matzahs. But if you give them wheat, or later on they would give flour when people stop making their own flour. So you give them flour, you give them wheat. So then they don't have to buy the wheat. It's mekarev hanaya. And that's the minhag. The minhag is to give them wheat. Now, that brings us to an interesting question, which is, what should you actually give them out? So originally, it's clear the minhag was, like we said, you give out wheat. If you look at the Shulchan Aruch already, it says the minhag is liknos chitim l'chalkim l'aniyim. But if you look at the Mishnah Berurah, I'm sorry, Sif Katan Dal, he says, haminhag l'chalik l'en kamach. So at the time of the Ramah, they were giving out wheat because everybody would make their own flour. By the time the Mishnah Berurah came around, they said, just give out flour and then they'll make their own matzahs. Nowadays, it doesn't make sense to give out flour either because nobody's taking flour and making their own matzahs. So nowadays, you should either give money or matzos. One could argue that according to Mishnah Berurah, the best way to do it is to give out the matzahs itself to the aniyim. However, that sometimes is practical. It's not always practical. So therefore, many people are yotze with just money. Okay. So we have two questions. I think that, or one question left, which is how much? And I'll add one more question to that, which is, can you use miser money? So there's a rule that miser money can only be used for mitzvos that are not otherwise obligatory. In other words, if I have to spend this money anyway for a mitzvah, I can't use miser money for that mitzvah. And that's true according to most poskim, even if it's going to poor people. So for example, can you use miser money for matanos laniyim on parim? So the answer is, we paskin, no, you can't. Why? Because even though it's going to poor people, there's an independent mitzvah of giving matanos laniyim. However, you could give, if you give more than a minimal amount of matanos laniyim, for that you could use miser, because you don't have to give. How much matanos laniyim do you have to give? A matana to two different aniyim, enough for them to buy a meal. So if you give $100 to matanos laniyim, so most of that could be for miser money, because that's well more than what you need to give. But the minimum amount, you can't use miser money. So the same thing is over here. In the olden days, like we said before, there used to be an assessment for maus chitim. The community would go ahead and they would look at how much money, you know, they anticipated to have to distribute. Okay. So, you know, if you're living in Teaneck, so the Vod of Teaneck would go ahead and they would say, okay, how much, you know, we have 75 people who are in need of maus chitim, and we have 5,000 people, I don't know how many people live in Teaneck, 2,000 people that are paying into the pot. And based off of that, they would make some type of assessment and everybody would have to pay whatever their assessment was. And you could not give miser money for that. However, nowadays, that whole system does not exist anymore. There are no assessments. There's no formal obligations. Everything is basically volunteer. And therefore, most poskim say you could use miser money. And there isn't really a formal amount. As a community, the community should really make sure that the poor people in that community are taken care of. And therefore, everybody should sort of try to figure out, okay, well, what's my share in that? You know, how much should I give? But how much that is, you can't give, as far as I know, a specific amount. Obviously, it's nice to be generous. And like we said before, nowadays, you could really use miser money because there isn't any formal assessment in terms of how much you have to give. So a person should try to be generous, try to make sure that they're thinking of other people, especially at this time. Pesach does create a significant financial hardship for many people. But in terms of a specific amount, I don't think we could put a number on it because there is no real shear the way our communities function. Okay, any other questions on maus chitim? Okay, great. So I thought we'll have 15 minutes left. One last topic. And this relates to the chiyuv of nashim, the chiyuv for women, and the mitzvos of Pesach. We're going to think of three different mitzvos that come up on Pesach. We could think of the others as well. We're going to talk about the chiyuv nashim for matzah, the chiyuv nashim for arba kosos, and the chiyuv of nashim for sipur yitzias Mitzrayim. So what would we normally expect? Should women be chayavos in any of those three mitzvos? Based off of the normal rules, what would we expect? They should be pturos, right? It's a mitzvah saseh shazman grama. So let's start with the Gemara Pesachim, Daf Mem Gimel Amud Beis. Damar Rebbe Lazar, Nashim Chayavos Bachilas Matzah Dvar Torah. Women have a rights obligation to eat matzah. There is no difference between men and women when it comes to matzah. Shneamar, Losochol Lav Chametz V'chulei. Kol Sheyeshnu Beval Tochal Chametz Yeshnu Bachilas Matzah. Vani Nashi Nami. Ha'ol Yeshnu Beval Tochal Matzah Chametz Yeshnu Bekom Echol Matzah. So the Gemara, as a pasuk, puts together the chiyuv of eating matzah with the iser of eating chametz. There are many halachos that relate to that. For example, you can make matzah out of things that would otherwise become chametz. If it can't become chametz, you can't make matzah out of it. So since women are obligated in the prohibition against eating chametz, that's a mitzvah slo saseh, so there's no difference between men and women when it comes to eating chametz. So, and the pasuk equates the two. So it makes sense that there's also going to be a chiyuv of matzah upon women. So when it comes to matzah, women are equally chayavos, no difference between men and women. Okay, what about arba kosos? So that's the next gemara. It's in Pesachim Kuf Chesem and Aleph. From Yeshua ben Levi, Nashim Chayavos Barba Kosos Halalo, She'af Hein Ayu Bosanes. Women are Chayavos and Barba Kosos. Why? So here we have a different svara. What's the svara that we give? Af Hein Ayu Bosanes. The women were involved in a miracle. There's an interesting debate over here between Rashi and Tosos. What does that mean? Does that mean they're equally involved in the nes, or they played an outsized role in the nes? How so? What does it mean they played an outsized role in the nes? Because b'schus nashim tzidkanos nigalu, the women were the ones that kept the Jewish people functioning. Tachas hatapuach eratich. We have other various ways in which women played an outsized role. So either it means they played an equal role, they played an outsized role, it's a machlokas. But one way or the other, the Gemara says the chayavos and arba kosos af hein ayobos hasanu hanes. So when it comes to arba kosos, there's no difference between men and women. Men and women are equally obligated. So Tosos over there raises an interesting question. Why do we need two different svaros? Right? We have one svara for matzah, one svara for arba kosos. So like, take a look at the Tosos, the next source. Shafin ayubos wanez. Vilav haitaima, lo ayu chayavim misham dinashim pturos mi mitzah saseshas man grama. Afal gav da arba kosos dirabanan, kein deraisa tikkun. We know. So why aren't they chayiv like they're chayiv in matzos? Well, because matzos, we have a special gzer sakasov. Since there's the equation of chametz with matzos, if they're chayiv in aser and chametz, they're chayiv in matzah. What about arba kosos? Afen hayubosones. Let's say you didn't have the svar of afen hayubosones. Would women be chayavos? Tosos says it sounds like they'd be pturos. But why? Isn't the principle of mitzvos aseisha zman grama only said by mitzvos deoraisa? Arba kosos is not a chayiv deoraisa. It doesn't say in the Torah you need arba kosos. Here we go back to remez, right? There's a remez to arba kosos in the Torah, like it says, "Voteis v'itzalti v'galti v'lakachti," or it says "kos paro" four different times. But that's just a remez; it's not a mitzvah deraisa. So Tosfos says, "Well, you're right. So if it's not a mitzvah deraisa, then why would we assume women are pturos?" So Tosfos answers a very important principle called the tikkun rabbanan ke'en deraisa tikkun. What that means is that when they made mitzvos de Rabbanan, they modeled them after the Doraisa. So since women are pturos from mitzvos aseh shazman grama that are Doraisa, so they would also be pturos from mitzvos aseh shazman grama that are de Rabbanan. However, since there's a compelling reason to include women here, namely, af hein hayu ba'osu anes, so therefore we include women. So therefore, women are so far, again, they're chayavos midoraisa in matzah, and they're chayavos in arbakosos midrabanan, no difference between men and women, for two separate reasons, for matzah, because we equate it to chametz, and for arbakosos, because afen hayuba usuhanes. Okay, that's the Tosfos in Psachim. Now, if we take a look at the Tosfos in Megillah, he asks an interesting question, the next source. Gabi matzah yesh maksha, lama li akesha dechol sheyeshno beval tochal chametz, yeshno bekol machol matzah, tepuk le mishum sha mitam shehen hayu ba'osu anes. We said originally, why do we know that women are chayavos in matzah? How do we know that? Because the pasuk equates matzah and chametz. Why do we need that svar? Why do we need that gzeres hakasuf? Why don't we say that women are chayavos in matzah because afen hayu ba'osu anes? In other words, for the same reason that we say they're chayavos in arbakosos, they should also be chayavos in matzah. Why do we need that svar? So the Tosfos gives two answers. Where it says, number one, v'yesh lomar, d'mishum haitam lo mechai ve'el medrabanan, ilav mehekesha, that the chiyuv of, the rule of afen hayu ba'osu anes is makes it a chiyuv derabanan, but not a deoraisa. To be a deoraisa, we need a hekesh. In other words, afen hayu ba'osu anes is a nice idea, but it doesn't make something into a mitzvah deoraisa. To make something into a mitzvah deoraisa, you need a hekesh. So for arbakosos, that's a mitzvah derabanan in the first place. So since it's a mitzvah derabanan, afen hayu ba'osu anes is enough to make them chayavos midirabanan. But if we want to make a woman chayavos midiraisa and matzah, we need to go ahead and have a pasuk or a hakish, a drasha. Answer two, Rabbeinu Yosef ish Yerushalayim tirates. Some of the Bali Atosfos made aliyah, which was not an easy thing to do 1,000 years ago, but they did. And so one of the Bali Atosfos is known as Rabbeinu Yosef ish Yerushalayim. And he answered, Desalka daitach lemiftere migzera shava de tesvav tesvav, de chag hasukos kedepiresh perk elu ovrim. Says Tosfos, says Rabbeinu Yosef ish Yerushalayim, that there's an argument that women should buy chayavos in matzah because afen hayu ba'osu anes, but there's also an argument to exempt them. Why? Because there's a gzeiras shava between the laws of Pesach and Sukkos. For example, there's a mitzvah to eat on the first night of Sukkos in the sukkah, and that's derived from matzah. Women are pturis from sukkah, and therefore, maybe we'd think they're pturis from matzah because of the gzeirah shava equating Sukkos and Pesach. So that's why we need the hekesh to make them chayavos in matzah. So what comes out, though, is according to Rabbeinu Yosef, afen hayu ba'osu anes on its own would be a svar d'oraisa. In other words, if you just had afen hayu ba'osu anes, if it wasn't for the fact that we have this gzeirah shava saying they're pturos because of, you would be chayav. So just to summarize, is afen hayu ba'osu anes, is that a svar d'oraisa or a svar d'rabanan? Does afen hayu ba'osu anes make someone chayav mid'oraisa or only mid'rabanan? According to the first answer in Tosfos, only mid'rabanan. According to the second answer of Tosfos, Rabbeinu Yosef Yerushalayim answers, no, afen hayu ba'osu anes makes women chayavos mid'oraisa. So is there a nafkamina between these two answers in Tosfos? So it could be. The nafkamina is the mitzvah Sipor Yetzias Mitzrayim. Are women chayavos in Sipor Yetzias Mitzrayim? Sipor Yetzias Mitzrayim is the mitzvah to say over the story, right? At the Leil HaSeder, how many mitzvahs de'oraisa do we have? We really have two, right? One is matzah, and one is Sipor Yetzias Mitzrayim. We have other mitzvahs de'rabanan, like maror, arbakosos, haseba, other things. But mitzvah de'oraisa, we have Sipor Yetzias Mitzrayim and matzah. Are women chayavos in Sipor Yetzias Mitzrayim? So if we were to learn like Rabbeinu Yosef, what would we answer? They are chayavos. Afen hayu ba'osu anes. If we were to learn like the first answer in Tosfos, maybe they would be chayavos midrabanan, because afen hayu ba'osu anes, but there wouldn't be a chiyuv de'oraisa on Sipor Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? So is there a difference between men and women when it comes to the mitzvah of Haggadah? That's the shayla. We know that there's no difference for matzah. We know there's no difference for arbakosos. What about first Haggadah? What about Sipor Yetzias Mitzrayim telling over the story? According to the first answer of Tosfos, maybe there's a difference. According to the second answer of Tosfos, there should be no difference. So if we look at the Sefer HaChinuch, that's the next source, he writes, the Noheges, again, the mitzvah, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, Vischam uvenekevos, no difference, men and women are equally chayavos, v'chol makom v'chol zman. So the Sefer HaChinuch argues that women are chayavos in Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Minchas HaChinuch, which is a commentary in the Sefer HaChinuch, says why? Who told them that they're chayavos in Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? However, if we answer like that the Sefer HaChinuch learns like Rabbeinu Yosef Ish Yerushalayim, so the answer is beautiful. The reason why women are chayavos in Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is because afen hayu ba'oso anes, and therefore they're chayavos. What does the Rambam say about this? The Rambam isn't clear. He doesn't say explicitly that women are chayavos. They're pturos. The Sefer you have over here, or V'simchas Medayik, that the Rambam implies that women are chayavos in Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, because the Rambam writes that women are chayavos in Arba Kosos, and the second of the Kosos is said on the Haggadah. Right, the Arba Kosos are said on four mitzvos halayla. First mitzvah is Kiddush. Okay, women are chayavos in Kiddush. We know that. Just like on Shabbos, they're chayavos in Kiddush. Second, Haggadah. Third, because of Mazon. Fourth is Halal. So he assumes that if they're chayavos in Arba Kosos, it means they're chayavos in the mitzvah. It's not a clear diuk. He's like that way from the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvos that sounds this way. And again, if you learn like the Rabbeinu Yosef Yerushalayim, it certainly makes sense that women would be chayavos. One might add, I think there's an idea that they say this from Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. That was the Rav's father. And the Chassam Sofer has a similar idea, that the idea that the idea as follows, that when do you say af hein hayu ba'oso anes? That is when it's a mitzvah of persume nisa. So where do we find that idea? We find that idea by Hanukkah. We find that idea by Megillah. In those two mitzvos, it's not just a mitzvah to remember the nes, but it's a mitzvah of persume nisa. How do I know that?
Rabbi Wiederblank, you're frozen. You can hear us.
We'll probably rejoin.
I don't know what just happened to me, but I disappeared, but I returned. So why? How do we know that this is a mitzvah of Persume Nisa? Because we make a bracha on Persume Nisa. What bracha do we make on Purim and on Chanukah? Sha'asa Nisim Lavoseinu Bayamim Mahim Bazman Hazeh, which shows it's not just a mitzvah to remember the Nes, but to be mefarsim the Nes. What about at the Seder? So Arba Kosos is also a mitzvah of Persume Nisa. And you could argue that Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is as well. How do we know that? We see that in a couple of places. First of all, we have the bracha of Asher Ga'alanu. So we don't say Sha'asa Nisim at the Seder, but Asher Ga'alanu is a bracha that could be seen as like Sha'asa Nisim, as being mefarsim the Nes. And also, the fact that the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim ideally should be done with other people, just like near Hanukkah and Purim. It's true that if a person's all alone, they still say the Haggadah, right? If nobody's around, you could ask yourself the Manishtana. But ideally, when it comes to mitzvos that are persume nisa, we always try to do them with other people. Try to light Hanukkah candles when other people are around. We try to do Megillah in public, even though, again, you're Yotzei, if you just do it by yourself. And the same thing with Magid. So if that's true, that's when we're going to say the svara of Afein Hayibos Onis. So let's just review. Oh, so Liba, you had a question, which I didn't see before, about should you pay for the price of matzahs, right? Should you give somebody? Yeah, so the answer to that question, I think, would be that you as an individual don't have the responsibility to pay for, you know, a poor person. As a community, the community has the responsibility to make sure that the poor people's needs are taken care of. And you're a member of the community. How that, you know, equals out per person will depend on how many rich people there are and how many poor people there are and the price of matzahs and all sorts of factors. If you're looking for shear and you're saying, oh, you know, let me, you know, give as much as, you know, I'm going to give what it would cost for a poor person to have matzos. So that's a nice thing to do. It's a nice, you know, it's not a formal shear, but that's certainly a nice way to think about it. There's actually an interesting discussion in the postgame. Do you have to give poor people the price of like this, the most mahudar shmur matzos, or is it enough to give them, you know, whatever the basics are to be yotzei? Yeah, Libby, you're going to say something?
I was going to say, why is that different than Matanos Lavionim? It's more specific. They were supposed to give them enough for the meal. But
well,
here,
in Matanos Lavionim, they were kovei a certain amount, right? Chazal made a shear. Here, Chazal didn't make a shear. So therefore, there's no formal shear. If you want to, you know, make up your own shear, not as a formal shear, but like as a nice idea, you can.
It's interesting because that would seem like it's a derabanan and this is deoraisa. You would think they would give it more of a formal share.
This isn't deoraisa.
Oh, that's true. That's right.
This isn't even derabanan, probably. It's a minhag. So as a minhag, why'd they not give it, even the minhag give it a formal share? Because they probably wanted to keep it flexible depending on the needs and what people could afford. All right. So to summarize, tonight we talked about three different mitzvos. The first one was the mitzvah of learning Shloshim Yom Kodem Achag. We saw that the Shulchan Aruch sounds like you should start learning Hilchos Pesach 30 days before Pesach. We saw that perhaps the minhag is to follow the view of the Ran, which is that you could answer, a teacher has to answer questions on Hilchos Pesach within 30 days. But at the very least, it certainly is something a person should start preparing for Pesach before 30 days, before Pesach. And I would add the following. Maybe we'll talk more about this next time, that preparing for Pesach doesn't just mean learning the halachos, that's part of it. It means, first of all, we talked about giving staka, but it also means thinking about the ideas of Pesach. Hachanos for Pesach, you know, Pesach is the Yantif of Emunah. It means preparing for the Seder. So wherever you're going to be at the Seder, you know, to think about ways that you could enhance your Seder. So preparing in all sorts of different ways. Including halacha, but I would say not limited to halacha. Then we talked about the halachos of kimach dechita. We saw there's a minhag to give kimach dechita. We saw that even though there isn't necessarily a formal amount how much you have to give, it's a very big and important thing that in celebrating our Pesach, our Yantif, we think not just about ourselves, but also about others who are in need. And finally, we talked about the mitzvos of the Seder night as they apply to women. And we saw that certainly matzah and arba kosos, there's no difference between men and women. And according to the Sefer Chinuch, same thing for Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And that would correspond perhaps to the opinion in Tosfos that Afen Hayu Ba'osu Anes is a Svara de Oraisa. Sashkayach, everyone. And Be'ezus Hashem will pick up next week. As I said, if anyone has any requests, I'm happy to try to accommodate in terms of let me know. I go too fast. I went too slow. Whatever you want to do more halacha, more drush, and let me know. And shkayach, everyone should have a wonderful week.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Oh, I'll call you and I'll ask you.
Okay.
Thank you.